Smith Show.
Website, TheRickSmithShow.com. So, you know, you look at this kind of bizarre about face. Yes, we're going to have a cybersecurity unit. It's going to be tremendous. It's going to be great. It's all that. And then, well, do I think it can happen? No, it can't. And you go, what? It's just kind of this kind of back and forth where, you know, out of, you know, the speech he gave in Poland was one side, the press conference he did before, completely different. And how is it that we end up in this world of, well, insanity? I mean, just crazy, just nuts. Here to talk a little bit about that. And also, you know, are we a less compassionate society? Is this making us meaner? Is this making us angry? Is it dividing us even further? That's why I've asked our good friend Propane Jane to come talk with us. Jane, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
So, again, you know, we saw on display on the international stage,
right,
the two sides of the Trump, the Dr. Jekyll and the Mr. Hyde.
Right, right. And I think we also saw, I think most importantly, the submissive Trump, who, you know, talks a good game and, you know, but at the end of the day, his bark is still much bigger than his bite when it comes to people who actually are posing a threat to us. You know, it's amazing how he manages to be so cordial with Russia and, you know, completely overlooks their interference in our election, you know, but is, you know, dead set on taking it to the media every day, every chance he gets. And so what we saw is that, you know, instead with our greatest adversary right now, someone who, you know, is on record having interfered in our election, he's so nice. And he's patting him on the back and he's, you know, smiling and, you know, he's very positive about, you know, their working relationship and things that they can do together. He's completely sidestepping the whole issue of the interference in the election. And you really just have to wonder why he's doing that. Why is he putting himself in a submissive role with someone who is wanting to destroy us very clearly? And I think that looks very suspicious, and I think that's also why the American public is just very, very dismayed by what's happened over the last couple of days.
Now, I mean, even some of the most ardent Trump supporters that I know are now starting to look at this and go, wait, well, this may be a bridge too far.
Yeah. I mean, because it just, you know, so much information has come out over the last couple of months. And even if, you know, he's sort of, you know, speaking up for his quote-unquote innocence or, you know, whatever, or what they like to call it, you know, he's new to the job and so he just didn't know that certain things were wrong to do or what the right things to do were, it still is curious because, you know, he's not addressing the attack that was made on the whole country.
Right.
I mean, at the end of the day, it becomes, is this about Trump personally? Are you getting along well with Russia because you get along well with Putin individually? And so therefore, it doesn't matter what attacks have been levied against our nation as long as, you know, his narcissistic supply is being fed by whatever behind-the-scenes relationship he has with Putin. And I think that is very scary. It's very nefarious. And it's something that's only going to make the public more anxious to see, you know, the results of Robert Mueller's investigation.
Yeah, I know I am. But here's the thing. I mean, it's my thought, and maybe you'll agree or disagree, that I don't think Trump and Putin had an agreement on, hey, let's collude to steal the election. And there's part of me that thinks Trump goes, I personally didn't do anything to foster this kind of relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing happened. And he's going to defend to the end because He knows it'll be a blemish on the election, on his presidency, if it's proven that there was collusion, that there was some action between his campaign and Russian spies or officials.
Right, right. And even if he didn't personally, call Putin up on his cell phone and sort of, mastermind this like cyber attack that happened, he benefited from it. He is fruit of the poisonous tree. Not just him, but various members of the Republican Party, Mike Pence. There have even been reports that various GOP members of Congress benefited from this hacked, information or fake news that was disseminated in their campaigns. And so you now have a Congress that in many ways is implicated. And so yes, the denials and the disavowals and sort of minimizing the extent to which Russian interference played a role in the election, that's all being done, I think, to protect everyone and to keep everyone in their same position. But again, it just goes back to the individual need versus what is in the best interest of the country. And so his narcissism, yes, is not going to allow him to admit that he didn't actually win because he's so great and more people voted for him, right? That's why he's always handing out the Electoral College map, because he doesn't like to face the fact that Hillary got almost 3 million more votes.
Yeah, but those were illegal votes, Jim.
Exactly, right? I mean, either it's rigged because he didn't get all the votes he should have gotten, or it's rigged and he got votes or, support that he shouldn't have gotten because of Russian interference. Either way, there's still this cloud of, illegitimacy that hangs over everything. And so I do think that motivates him to really make his relationship with Russia seem, our nation, actually, our relationship with Russia, make that seem like it's this really copacetic, we're going to work together, because then that just draws attention away from the attack that's actually happening behind the scenes and mostly on the internet.
Yeah, but let me ask you this, because this has been thrown at me a number of times by people who go, well, so let's say there was collusion. What's the response? Do you impeach Trump? Do you impeach Pence? Does Hillary become president? Or do we just not know because this is so unprecedented? I'm curious your thought.
Yeah, I think we have to accept that we are at a time in history that has never before been seen in our history. And this is unprecedented. There is no blueprint for this type of, there's no blueprint for anything that's happened in the last, almost 6 months in regards to all of this information that's come out with Russia. But then also we have to also focus on the voter suppression and the, Supreme Court sanctioned dismantling of the Voting Rights Act. So things have happened in this election in particular from, our foreign adversaries and then also from people, unfortunately, in the Republican Party,
right,
who are seeking to thwart our democracy by limiting, the days you can vote, limiting polling places, making you have to have all of this extensive documentation to vote. So all of this has been culminating over the last couple of years to where those elements plus Russian interference have come together to make just this, this giant disaster. And there is no rubric, I think, for how we address it. And it really is going to take us coming together as a nation the same way that, generations ago, our forefathers and foremothers, had to do and had to come together, get people in office who could pass good legislation that actually protects us and protects our voting rights and preserves those voting rights so that we're not having to deal with situations like this that get out of control because the people don't have a say in the government anymore.
You bring up an interesting point because, look, the Russian thing, and I've been saying this for a while, the Russian thing is important.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it to me wasn't the factor in this election. It was the voter suppression. It was all these voter ID laws. It was all of the schemes that the Republican Party has been working on since, you know, the 2000s. I mean, you go back to 2000, you know, the voting while block in Florida and, you know, with Choice Point and kicking people off the voting rolls because their names rhymed with someone who may have committed a felony. And you go down to the caging and you just go down to the list. And now a cross check, which is coming, and you've got the Kobach Commission.
You've
got all of this stuff. You know, look, to me, you're right. The where we should be spending all of our time is on the real terrorist organization in this country. And that's the Republican Party.
Yeah. I mean, because at the end of the day, you know, voting in elections, it's about, you know, getting as many people on your side to the polls to vote so that we can just beat them by, you know, sheer numbers. And the problem is that conveniently and by design, the voters who were swayed by this propaganda, the voters who were swayed by the racism, the misogyny, the sort of bait and switch of the Southern strategy in terms of, you know, kind of hiding the impact of the 1% and greed and all of that, the impact of that is that those voters are basically given over to the GOP every election. That's a known entity that they are going to vote Republican. And so what the Republicans are doing is they are decimating, they are siphoning off the Democrats, you know, constituency, either by, you know, drawing them away with some of this populist language, like we saw happen in some ways with, like, the Sanders campaign, or by getting those voters who are in marginalized communities, taking them completely off of the voting rolls, so that our ability to fight back and to win these elections is so limited because we don't have the numbers anymore. They are limiting how many people we have to actually show up to the polls every election. And so that's where the Russian interference becomes just kind of like the cherry on top, because it really fomented this really negative sentiment amongst those voters on the right to make sure that they actually showed up. And they showed up to, you know, polling places that you know, they weren't matched. They didn't have the opposition there to beat them back, and that's why we're where we are today.
Now, let me ask you this, though. I mean, because, you know, you brought up the point. You know, all of this information swayed some of these voters, and they don't even know that they were swayed. That's the sign of a great con.
Yeah,
when
for
you've
sure.
been conned and you don't even know it, you you'll never admit to it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what does that say about us? I mean, we used to, you know, and I still remember a time when, you know, we all kind of shared somewhat similar values, we all kind of lived in similar communities, and now, you know, we've just ripped apart. I mean, I go back to George Bush's compassionate conservatism, and you go, man, that's just all but dead.
Yeah. I mean, you know, throughout history, you know, what we find is that sweeping demographic change and progress in civil rights actually causes, or, you know, it is followed by a backlash. And we've seen that throughout history, and I don't think that, you know, what we're seeing today is much different. You know, we are seeing the ascendancy of marginalized demographics. We are seeing a population that, you know, very soon white Americans are going to be an ethnic minority. And I think that point was solidified by, the, you know, just historic nature of having the first black president, in 2008. And I think that, you know, over the years, what we've seen with, you know, the opposition to immigration, and this Islamophobia, you know, this is a backlash to, demographic change. I talk about this a lot kind of online in terms of being a Texan, and I can tell you how much my county has changed, you know, since I grew up here, and the school district, how it looks different. You know, the school that my kids go to is totally, it looks totally different than the school that I went to. And I have heard my neighbors say, you know, I don't want to live here anymore because there's too many brown people. you know, and they're moving out and going out into these rural communities so that they can be in places that are less integrated. And in the voting booth, they are voting for a sentiment that agrees with that, that says, I want to be separate. I don't like the change. I don't like other people being in power than you know, people who look like me. The sameness, you know, there's a fear in that. And unfortunately, I just think that is what's driving a lot of people's voting decisions way more than the economics of, you know, how am I going to pay my bills? How am I going to have my health care? How am I going to have all this stuff? And this is why when we are finally now to the point of, you know, away from campaigning and just actually governing, this is why these people are now horrified, because they're looking at how the economics is being played out and they're on the losing end of it. But it's because they voted for that sentiment that we are where we are, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, you look at this healthcare bill, which I'm hoping, I'm hoping McCain is right that it's dead on arrival.
Yeah.
But you know, you look at, you know, the Republicans are showing us who they are. You look at their healthcare plan. You look at their tax plan. It's who they are, and at some point, I hope we believe them.
Yeah, you would hope, right? I mean, you would hope. But I think that for a lot of people, it is coming to grips with the reality that someone who looks like you and shares your same biases and prejudices actually is not really on your same side, because they are a one percenter. They're like a toxic one percenter, and they are out to give more money to rich people. And they are not trying to give, they may agree with you that you don't want any more Mexicans in America. They may agree with you that, you think there should be a Muslim ban and all of this other stuff. But at the end of the day, the bread and butter issues of your household and how it runs, they are in a complete disagreement with you. And so this is why these people are showing up at town halls. You know, in Kansas, Representative Moran, half of the town showed up. Half of the town showed up to say, oh, my gosh, you're about to kill me, basically. And how many of them voted for him? How many of them vote Republican religiously? And so, you know, again, the Southern strategy strikes again. And this is why I always focus on this, because it happens election after election after election. And, you know, it's just a revolving door, because as soon as they get back into office, they basically take everything away that the Democrats worked so hard to put there for the people.
No, but here's the thing. I mean, you know, isn't that highly predictable? I mean,
it is.
Know, don't we naturally segregate ourselves off to be, you know, the old birds of a feather flock together mentality? I mean, isn't this something we do naturally? And not just white people, but blacks and Hispanics. Mm-hmm. That naturally, you're going to be in like communities, or
absolutely.
Am I off base?
Absolutely, absolutely, and it's like I talk about peer pressure. You know, culturally within your community, you know, people tend to share values, and then when you talk about having a monopoly over the media and the messages that get out to people, when you look at the demographics of who watches Fox and who listens to Rush Limbaugh on the radio, and how that translates to votes for Republican candidates who are saying the same thing, that behavior then becomes predictable, because you see who's consuming that media and how they respond to it. And so, you know, in terms of Russia, the acknowledgement has already been made by the intelligence community that's how the propaganda was formulated, and that's how it was disseminated, and that's how it worked.
Right.
And it worked on both the left and the right. And so to stand in the face of that and go, no, that didn't happen, when actual experts who get paid money to do this every day are telling us that, either they're just like sort of willfully ignorant and like ostriches with their head in the sand, or they know the reality of that but just don't want to accept that they've been complicit in it, you know?
I mean, is it possible that, you know, they know what's going on? We're just fighting this game. But here's the thing. I mean, you know, how do you have a society? Because you said, you know, we used to have shared values. How do you have a society where we have so many different cultural ideals and so many cultural visions. How does that mesh? I mean, you know, when I was a kid, there was the idea of the melting pot. Everyone came.
Right, exactly.
We all melted into the same melting pot. And you know, the theory was is that you became Americans and everyone, you were just like us.
Right.
But that's really not happening. I mean, I went back to my hometown of Cleveland and I went through an area that had gone through in my lifetime several changes. First, it was, you know, the Southerners coming up. So you had a lot of Southerners who lived in this particular area. Then the Hispanics took over.
Right.
And then, you know, a different, I forget who was next. And now it's the Muslims who are taking over.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could say that those first three kind of melded in eventually. And then I don't see how the Muslim community is going to be able to do that. But, you know, or do you think it's possible?
I think it's possible, and I think that we are just experiencing growing pains.
Another one.
I mean, you know, if you think about New York, and you think about the Irish, and you think about the Italians, and you think about every wave of immigrants that came to America, and the discrimination that they faced in terms of, you know, just integrating into our society.
So there's hope.
I think there's hope. But I think, you know, I think what you're saying is very interesting because this weekend, my husband and I, we were watching, MTV, we were watching music videos from the 80s and we were just cracking up because, you know, it was so liberal. I mean, you know, it was just like the videos were so diverse, you know, and my husband, you know, was laughing. He was saying, you know, it felt like the 80s, you know, people were dancing together, they were making music together, they were doing all their drugs together, you know, and we both grew up in the 80s. And so, you know, looking back at the 80s and thinking about how it felt like we were on such a good trajectory in terms of the melting pot idea. And, you know, and so we just were thinking about, like, well, what happened? Well, Reagan happened, right? I mean, you know, our policies legislatively went away from, like, this kind of liberal utopia, socialism, everybody, you know, golden rule, everybody works together for the general welfare. You know, we abandoned that in favor of this, you know, trickle-down approach that over the last 30 years has really just led us to a point where there's such a scarcity of resources that I think everybody is clinging to their own corner for whatever crumbs they can get, and it turns people against each other, and I think that's why these divisions start bubbling up to the top, too. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's the latest version of the Hunger Games. And
right,
you know,
exactly.
It's interesting because I just had the same kind of conversations in saying that, you know, when our generation, because I'm assuming we're about the same age since I grew up in the 80s as well. And I said, you know, our generation grew up as the last generation who could be kids without everything being structured and without everything being videotaped and all of this kind of, well, this kind of hooray for me and the heck with everyone else.
Right.
It just... You know, and again, you go back to that Reagan era. It was really that moment.
Yeah, it was. It was. And I think we have to be very, very cognizant about, you know, what happens in office. I mean, when you think about the Supreme Court and these lifetime appointments, those people remain in office. I mean, a lot of these people who are in Congress right now have been there for 20 or 30 years.
Yep.
And they are the architects of this vulture capitalism, and now that it's coming to fruition, you know, they're the last people that are going to remove it. You know, this is finally their dream come true. And so I think that it's just going to be incumbent upon us as people who know better or and want better and aspire to better for our children and for our nation, you know, as a whole, to just try to get some people in the office, you know, as much as we can to speak up for our side of the story.
It's extremely important. So last question I've got for you. You know, what advice do you give people on a daily basis? What, you know, we're in this moment of kind of national insanity. What advice do you give people?
You know, I think this week I'm going to say take a break. Take a, you know, day or two break. Just turn instability in chief off. My approach to this G20 thing was, I knew Trump is going to be ridiculous. He's ridiculous every single day. It's predictable. It's, you know, yes, we don't know the full extent of how ridiculous it's going to be, but it's mostly going to be an embarrassment. And so do you on that particular day have to, you know, sort of check in with something you already know is going to be there?
Yeah.
Can you take a break and, you know, watch Golden Girls or... something else that makes you smile and makes you laugh? Can you go help someone who needs help, who isn't paying attention to this either? And take a break from it. And then when you get back to it, you know, focus on policies and legislation that will help.
There you go. In fact, I took your advice last week, dropped out the entire week.
See,
and it was a great week.
It feels great. Exactly. I've done it many times.
So it's the kind of sanity we all need. Jane, appreciate the time. Always great talking with you.
All right. You too. Have a great week.
You as well. Our good friend Propane Jane. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Time to talk.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
I'm Rick Smith.